Hello, it's me, Graham Norton. Time for another edition of the Graham Norton with Waitrose podcast. Let's see what we've got today. Lorraine Kelly pops in to tell me all about her brand new novel, The Island Swimmer. Show chef Martha has turmeric cookies. Interesting. And where would we be without problems? Maria's bringing in the post bag now, so it's time to solve your dilemmas in Graham's Guide. Hello, Maria.
Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday to you. How are you?
Well, why do we always have that thing on Sunday where you're kind of Saturday? It's like, ooh, weekend, Sunday.
Well, because the shadow of Monday looms large.
Do you know, isn't it such a long time since any of us were at school? I say you and me.
Yeah.
And yet the Sunday night, you know, having a bath and washing your hair for school, and the sense of dread never leaves you.
No. It really doesn't. And there's something about Sunday telly, because Sunday telly's never changed. Sunday telly's always been the same.
Yes, it's sort of the heartbeaty time,
yeah,
isn't it, really?
It's called The Midwife, it's heartbeat, it's those sorts of things. And that all signals, and also things like Antiques Roadshow, Songs of Praise, it all signals bad things on the way.
But why did we sort of dread Monday morning school so much?
Yeah, because it was school.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
true.
If you look forward to going to school, there was something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also,
well, the SWATs looked forward to going to school.
I don't think they did.
I was not one of those
people. I think they'd have still been happier to sit at home and read a book than go to school and read
a
book. Yeah, because you want to be at home, because there's a biscuit tin and, you know. Yeah.
What did you do last night? Did you do anything?
What did we do? Well, I watched the final of The Masked Singer.
Oh, my goodness. And somebody who's in McFly won. Oh, sorry, spoiler.
Yeah, well, I still couldn't tell you who it was.
No.
So, I mean, I do know.
Danny Jones?
It was Danny. But what I didn't know was that Danny could sing like that. Amazing.
He was in McFly. He was in a boy band.
No, but like, yeah, being in a boy band is one thing. He sang Celine Dion songs and things. I mean, it was just amazing.
I prefer Celine Dion.
Celine Dion, you know, she's from Manchester.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, very good. But no, he was excellent. And Alex Brooker came second. Not sure of the justice of that. And
he off the last leg.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Lamar was third. There you go. I've saved people about an hour and a half.
Good, good. No, I wouldn't be watching it anyway because I can't understand the construct, but that's just me.
It's a guessing game. It's fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I watched, this is my recommendation, Alice and Jack.
Oh, is it good?
Channel 4. Yes, and people have watched One Day, the David Nichols adaptation that's on the...
Which is also very good, but very different.
Which is also very good. But this is somehow more... You know how people are really complicated and utterly bonkers? This is more utterly bonkers and complicated.
Yeah.
But I do sometimes think as well, if you're going to watch this, that Alice... People should run a mile from her, really.
Yes.
You watch it, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think Alice and Jack is more like what love is.
Yes.
Whereas One Day is what we wish it was.
It's idealised. But also One Day is about nostalgia.
And young people.
And young people, which is why we liked it. But yes, Domhnall.
Domhnall.
Domhnall, sorry. Domhnall Gleeson.
They're easy to say once you spell them correctly.
Yes. Domhnall Gleeson is marvellous.
Yes. As is Andrea Riseborough.
Oh, so good.
And because you read the chemistry, because you kind of think, you know, on paper, if you saw those two people in a bar, you kind of go, oh, they're not going to get together. But they're acting so amazing, the chemistry kind of fizzes between them. You really believe that they've got the hots for each other. Yeah.
No, I thoroughly recommend that. Now, let's have a brief chat about the BAFTAs, because I'd quite like to have a wager with you.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, about what's going to win.
Poor Things will win a lot.
Will it win Best Film?
Well...
No, Oppenheimer.
Did you see Oppenheimer?
I didn't get on with Oppenheimer.
I didn't get on with it either.
I didn't get on with Maestro either.
Oppenheimer, for me, and this is radical, and I probably shouldn't say this...
Go on, will you go viral?
I'll never get a guest again. I found it laughable.
Oh. Yeah, I'll shut up now.
It was like... When the taxi drove...
And here we have Cillian Murphy.
When the taxi drove away and Einstein was standing on the lawn, you just thought, what is this, a sketch? And also, well, it was so long.
Yeah, no, everything is too long now. I'm going for Poor Things winning quite a lot. I would like something for Anatomy of a Fall.
Oh, that was good. The dog in Anatomy of a Fall.
I don't think the dog is up for anything.
It won an award at Cannes.
Did it?
Won the Paw d'Or or something. No, there is every year there's an award at Cannes.
For a dog.
For the best animal performance.
Well, why hasn't BAFTA caught on to that? That's ridiculous.
We all
love our dogs.
But that dog in Anatomy of a Fall, it is the best performance by a dog I've ever seen.
And they didn't drug it, did they?
No. They trained it to do that. And because I just thought you are filming a dog at a very distressing time in its life. And no, they trained it to do that. I don't know how.
That's incredible. Phenomenal. I'm going to train my dog to do that. I may never see you again. I think Sandra Hula, who's in An Aspirin and Fall, I would like her to win
that film.
Yeah, for that film. But I think it will be Emma Stone.
Yes, and rightly so. Emma Stone is a remarkable in Poor Things.
Yes.
She's really good.
Paul Mescal, Andrew Scott, anything for them? For Andrew All of Us Strangers?
Andrew Scott is not nominated.
Oh.
How is that possible? It's crazy. His performance in that film is flawless.
Has he got anything for the Oscars either?
No, nobody. All of Us Strangers was kind of completely ignored by the Oscars.
Wow.
Yeah, they didn't notice it had happened.
They must know how Bradley Cooper feels.
Yeah, exactly.
For Maestro.
Yeah. But yeah, weird that Andrew Scott's not up for a BAFTA. Very, very, very strange. Virgin Radio.
Dear Graham and Maria, my lovely stepbrother, Ben, came into a great deal of money when his grandmother died a few years ago. He decided to quit his office job and travel the world. Imagine our surprise and delight when, after nearly 2 years of travelling, he messaged from Venezuela to say he had married a local girl he met in a bar in Caracas. Is this real? After a whirlwind romance. Joyful news. Ben was ecstatic. And from the photos he sent, we can see at least two very prominent reasons why he was drawn to her. Oh, really? Gina is attractive and 20 to his 44. Plus ça change. She comes from a less affluent area and has a four-year-old daughter whose father, he later hinted, was in prison. But no matter, he says he has found the love of his life. Ben and Gina soon made plans to relocate to Britain.
Is this a novel?
With her daughter. Well, it feels like it. Do you know where it's going yet? No.
I have a clue.
All seemed well. Ben came back to look for somewhere for them to settle down. But then, while he was away, Gina was involved in a very serious road accident, the details of which are hazy. This has left her needing a string of operations. She has now told Ben she cannot leave her mum and sisters in Caracas, but it is too dangerous for Ben to live anywhere in Venezuela as he's a prime target for kidnappers. He's back in Britain, loyally sending her large amounts of money to pay for her very expensive operations. Beyond the first admission, she's refused to let him visit her in hospital, and neither has she produced any medical bills. He pays cash into her account. It seems pretty obvious to my husband and I that my shy and trusting stepbrother, really, is being scammed big time by Gina. Or her ex, or both of them. But Ben is blinded by romantic notions. Should we bite our tongues and watch as she breaks his heart and drains his bank account? He is a grown adult after all. Or should we try to gently open his eyes so that at least he keeps his dignity? That's gone, man. And something and something to put towards a deposit on a house. The rest of the family is no help. They prefer to take Ben's rose-tinted viewpoint. What should we do? That's from Kelly in Amersham. Well, that is a novel and a half,
yeah,
Kelly.
Good story, by the way. Thank you for sending it in, Kelly. You don't want advice. You just wanted to tell us that story.
Yeah, and it is a good story. And there's no fall like an old fall. He's only 44, but she is only 20.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's his money. He didn't have it before. He's got it now. How he chooses to spend it is really his business. And, you know, you have to be there to mop up the pieces or whatever the phrase is. Mop up the something. Because other than saying you haven't had any receipts for hospital admissions, she won't let you see her. She doesn't want you there. Is this not making alarm bells ring for you, shy and retiring Ben?
Yeah, Ben's a moron, isn't he? I mean, just you know.
No, I don't mean to laugh at Ben's plight. I do, actually.
Come on. I mean, really, Ben. Like, what? I think if Ben was to listen to this, and you know, these names have been changed, so he'll be going, wow, that guy Ben sounds stupid. Not like me and my love.
Yeah.
You know, because I think if it was anyone else, he'd be able to see it. But he is, as Kelly says, he's blinded by his love for the lovely Gina.
And blinded by his need to believe. I mean, you see it with both sexes, frankly, with women who send off money to their boyfriends in Ghana.
And also, even beyond the operation-y thing, it's too dangerous for him to live in Venezuela. And she can't leave her mother and sisters. So However, what you know, forget about the operations. Mm-hmm. This is over. Mm. You know, they've had their fun. Great. It was essentially a holiday romance. Ben's back now. He just needs to knock it on the head.
You have to tell, I'm that person, you have to tell me how to knock it on the head then, or why I should.
Well, it's been knocked on the head.
Yeah, but he's still thinking it isn't. While there's still a lifeline to the bank account.
So I would ask you, yes. How do you think you are, how does this end happily? How do you end up living happily ever after with Gina?
Well, once I've finished all my money, I can go back to Caracas.
Because you wouldn't be a kidnap threat then.
I wouldn't be a kidnap threat. So, and she can look after me with her mother.
Oh, that's great. And she'll be so fit after all her medical procedures.
Yeah, and also so thrilled to see me, and so will her ex-husband, who's strangely out of prison.
Yeah, he's out now. That's handy, isn't it? Did they get married? They did get married.
They did get married, and it's kind of gone on for a little while. Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's the tale as old as time,
etc. Yes, I mean, so what, basically, I suppose we haven't really addressed what Kelly should do. My favourite responders again today will be getting Waitrose Pizza and Prosecco Dine-In. It's a number one mushroom and truffle sourdough pizza. Oh, yeah, fermented sourdough topped with salsa, truffina sauce, mozzarella cheese, roasted mushrooms, mascarpone cheese and parsley. Delicious. And you pair that with a bottle of Thompson & Scott Naughty alcohol-free sparkling rosé. There you go. All the fun, none of the alcohol. Morning, Graham and Maria. Simple way for Ben to test the situation is to tell his missus he's now broke and all the money is gone. His actions then will reveal all. Her actions then will reveal all. Kevin and Swanland. Yes, I mean, that would speed it up. Kelly needs to give her stepbrother a brutal dose of common sense and a good hard shake. The poor fool is being made a mug of. Love is blind. Sometimes you need someone to remove the blinkers. But how to do it? How to do it, Caroline? Yes, you're right, but it's not easy to do. Sheila's in Solihull. Hello, Sheila. I think the chap with the wife in hospital in Venezuela should say that he is going to ask for the hospital to send her bills directly to him. Say something like he needs to prove payments for the tax man or whatever. See what the response is. If it's legitimate, it shouldn't be a problem, but I'm guessing he will get objections. I mean, that is a very practical thing to do. Would he agree to do that? He might, just to try and prove his stepsister wrong. But then he might not, because in his heart, he probably knows that those bills are not going to arrive. Hello. Could Ben's stepsister employ a local private detective? Oh, I love it. Oh, a local private detective. Hi, Venezuelan. P.I. To take photos that show that Gina is healthy and well. This may still cause a rupture between Ben and his sister, but it will be harder for him to dismiss physical evidence. And that's from Heather. Don't mess with Heather. She's gotcha. Dear Ben, I have been contacted on the internet by a Nigerian prince who believes he can unlock enough funds to solve all of Gina's problems. If you can just get an initial input of funds, I can send you the bank details. If you make the deposit, I'm sure it'll all work out. And then in brackets, just providing a more well-known example to illustrate what's going on. Come on, lad. Wake up and smell the Venezuelan coffee. And that's from Richard in Salford. I tell you what, Richard in Salford can have the Waitrose Pizza and Prosecco Dine-In. Graham's Guide. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Here's the second one, which is still quite long. Okay. Dear Graham and Maria, my partner and I have been with each other for 12 years. We recently got engaged. But for the past 5 years of our relationship, we've been having this ongoing dilemma about what a wedding could look like for us. The problem isn't marriage. We want that wholeheartedly. We both love each other and want to call each other husband and wife. That's why we got engaged. The problem is the journey to get there. Every time we discuss what a wedding would look like and the guest list, it ends in a horrible argument. My partner says he has no real friends he can invite, and it would be a massive embarrassment for him on the day if the majority of the guest list is mine. He says, and fully believes, that he has always struggled to maintain friendships. It's not totally true, though. He has a couple of friends that he would go for a drink with, who he doesn't consider close friends, but he doesn't have best friends. He sees the close friendships I have from school, etc., and gets sad that he struggles to maintain close friendships. My friends have become his friends, but when it comes to putting together a guest list, he struggles to write down more than his immediate family members. All right, we get it. We have only ever talked about having a small wedding. I've spoken about having just close family and friends, never anything big. My worry is that we'll end up having a wedding with immediate family to make him feel comfortable, and it'll feel like a big compromise to me. If I'm being honest, I'm already starting to resent him for not trying to work on his insecurities. Ah, we've been having this dilemma for so long, I just feel like I'm at a dead end with it. Any advice from anyone who has dealt with something similar would be massively appreciated. And that's from Bella in Cumbria. Bella in Cumbria, why are you marrying this loser? Have you spent paragraphs telling us that he's insecure, he doesn't have any real friends, he's jealous of your friends that... I mean, it sounds like you resent him horribly for not having any friends. A lot of men don't have friends. They just don't put the work in. And as a woman, you know, we do have to put the work in, and it's possible to do that. As for your wedding that you've been arguing about for 5 years, just go away, the two of you. That's it. Done and dusted. You don't want to spend a whole lot of money on a wedding anyway, because you're just setting up. Oh, no, you're not really young. They've been together for 12 yeah. years. But, you know, spend it on a holiday for you too. Spend it on a course for him, how to make friends and keep them.
Buy him a book.
Don't spend money. Don't resent him. Just do it with two witnesses that you get from the street, because all you want to do is call each other husband and wife. Or, alternatively, just start calling each other husband and wife. There, the end.
And, you know, I think there's two things here, Bella. One, he's known your friends for 12 years. Like, couldn't they not be his friends now?
Yeah. No, Bella isn't letting go of her friends that easily. She really wants to punish him for not having any friends.
But also, I wonder...
Why do you let them go?
But does she see her friends that often? Because, you know, these her friends from school and stuff, are these just people just digging up to invite to her wedding? Because, you know, if they were in their lives all the time, he would know them. He'd be totally comfortable, kind of, yeah, we're having a wedding and these are our friends, da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
So...
I think Bella really wants him to work on his insecurities yeah. about everything.
And, you know, and so long as Bella's partner doesn't mention in his speech at the wedding, I don't know anyone here.
Yeah, I don't even have a best man. But here's a wax puppet of sooty.
No one will know. So, but the other thing I would like to say to Bella is, because she kind of goes, blah, 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 wedding, it'll feel like a big compromise to me. You're getting married. You know, welcome to the world of compromise. That's what you're getting involved in.
You've got to share your life with this man with so many insecurities.
Yeah.
They're yours now.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of compromise along the way. So if compromise makes you really uncomfortable, I'm not sure marriage is for you, Bella. That's what I would say.
I mean, she's resenting him already. She doesn't want to resent him, but she's resenting him already. I think you've been resenting him for the last 12 years, Bella.
I mean, it's such a weird... argument to have. You know, I suppose I do think listeners will know, because I think this is a common argument where one person wants a big wedding, one person wants a small wedding.
But she says she's very happy with a small wedding, and then she goes on, it's like, you know, not keeping to one thing, and then she goes on to say I want a big yeah. wedding because...
And also, Bella, the other people who'll be really happy with a small wedding are your friends, because that means they don't have to go.
Yeah, small and short.
Yeah. Ideal.
I don't think a wedding should be any longer than an hour.
No, I think if they suddenly saw a picture on Facebook of you and your husband on a beach somewhere, you'll just get a lot of nice comments going, thrilled for you, so happy, da-da-da, and then that's the end of it.
Yeah, are you doing it for the presents? Because you won't want any of them anyway. I mean, people now...
Well, also, he won't be able to use them because they're from her friends.
They're her friends, yeah. yeah. He'll only have to use yeah. his own things.
Yeah.
Because people who do that, you know, the weddings go on and on forever, and now it's wedding weekends and now it's wedding weeks, but in, you know, Bangalore, we're going out to India to get stop.
And it's all for Instagram, isn't it? It's all so they photograph well, because nobody wants a kind of Instagram wedding in the rain.
Insta likes.
Yeah.
You ran out of steam there, didn't you?
We ran out of enthusiasm, Bella. But I think people will have advice for you, because this is, I think, a really... I mean, not the friends thing. The friends thing is weird. But the big wedding, small wedding dilemma is, I think, very, very,
but
very
also,
common.
But also, can I just say, to add to that, the insecurities, the men not having friends and the insecurities, and men are quite often very happy to have... you know, to just be part of the women's friendship groups. And, you know, Barbara has a husband. I quite get on with him.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's enough for them. It's not like us. We need to go, that's my best friend. That's my second best friend. That one I don't really like very much. Blah, blah, blah. So I think if anybody has any tips about or has suffered the no friends syndrome, that would be interesting for Bella to find out too.
You could form a group. I went to a party
group.
Once, a birthday party, and the woman whose birthday it was, in her speech, did her top 10 friends.
No!
Yeah.
Did people walk out?
Well, we started talking. We got so bored because she was a bit drunk, so she ran out of 10. So actually...
She told you why they were in the top 10 as well. So there was a paragraph on each.
It was a kind of, you know, add in at number two.
My buttocks are embarrassed for her.
Yeah, no, it was awful. Our responses part two. And again, my favourite responders are getting the Waitrose Pizza and Prosecco dine-in. Derek says, Dear Graham Maria, when I got married, it was in my wife's area, and at the wedding, I had 5 guests and she had 200. It looked so bad, the priest asked half her family to move over to my side of the church. It lightened up the wedding. Why did you have a side of the church for 5 people? it was in my wife's area. Strange, but anyway, look, you're married and I was happy and it all worked out. Morning. Read Bella and the Wedding Dilemma. My husband didn't have many friends, wasn't close to his family, and doesn't like being the centre of attention. So when we got married, it was tiny to accommodate his wishes. It was fine. Did the job. Focus on the outcome, not the process. Plan a lovely honeymoon. That lasts much longer than the wedding day. Anne Phillipson. That is good advice. Focus on the outcome, not the process. That because you want to be married. So just get married. I wanted to get married in my lunch hour and go back to work. We both worked at the same office. We compromised and had a small wedding of 42 years later, and still no arguments, going strong with the love of my life. My advice is just go away, get married on the beach, tell him to grow a pair and save the cash. That's from David and Janet, just back from a kava breakfast in Tenerife. Ooh, feeling no pain. Well done you. Niels in Surrey. I had a similar wedding disagreement with my ex. Ooh. She ended up running off with a co-worker. So when the situation arose with my next girlfriend, we went to Vegas and got married in the same drive-thru as Britney Spears. Cost £60, took 6 minutes, and didn't even have to get out of the car. Had a great holiday too. Luckily, our wedding lasted longer than Britney's. Today is our 16th anniversary. Happy anniversary, Neil. Bella, weddings should be about you and your partner. I got married last year to my partner of 12 years and we had the best day. We had immediate family only with my adult children and their boyfriends, our siblings and families and my mom. None of my friends or his were offended and wished us the best. Keep it simple and personal to you both. Wishing you a long and happy marriage. And that's from Laura in Hampshire. Thank you very much for all the advice. And it is that thing with weddings, isn't it? You know, have the wedding that suits you. Don't get into huge amounts of debt for your wedding. Have the wedding you can afford and have the wedding that suits you both. So good luck. The Waitrose Pizza and Prosecco, I am going to give it to... you know what? I'll give it to David and Janet because they've been married for 42 years. Why not? Yeah, give it to them. Very good. Still to come, Lorraine Kelly tells me about her first ever book, The Island Swimmer. But first, ding ding. Now, I have to say, when I heard what you were making, I thought, well, they sound very healthy. They look like a treat.
Yeah, they are definitely a treat.
Yeah.
Not healthy.
Good.
I don't know. So these are turmeric latte cookies. I don't know if turmeric lattes are supposed to be a health food or whether they're just supposed to be like a kind of chai latte, that kind of like nice spiced.
But isn't turmeric
warming.
Supposed to be like wildly good for you?
Yeah, I guess so. It's a pain to cook with, I find.
Oh, really?
As in just like, because the staining, the colour. I haven't, if anyone's got any good tips for how you avoid getting it, like, you know, in your fingernails and on your, my chef whites, I'm like, right, don't touch them.
Don't.
Don't, it will never come out.
Is it like the, you know, the pollen from flowers? You know, when you get that on things, you can't get rid of it.
It's so powerful. They use it to dye clothes because it is that powerful.
Well, there
so
you
you've got to be very careful. I feel like the powdered stuff, which is what's in these cookies, isn't as quite as intense. But the fresh stuff, if you see it in like a supermarket or in a shop, it's so yellow.
I've never cooked with fresh turmeric.
Yeah, maybe you just have to wear yellow when you're
doing
it.
Is it like ginger? Do you grate it like ginger?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But this is just the regular, the thing that everybody has.
Yes, this is in your spice cupboard. A little bit easier.
Yeah. So we should tell people what they are. So they're turmeric latte.
Yes, turmeric latte cookies. So lovely spiced cookies with lots of different layers of flavour. They're a recipe by Christelle Piera, who's written a cookbook called The Flavour Kitchen. So it's all about incorporating big flavours and just exploring the world and finding out lovely recipes. So this is one of those.
Lovely. Well, I often sprinkle a bit of turmeric on my granola in the morning.
Ooh. Ooh, yeah. You're going to have to update your latte. Just keep going all the way along.
What the hell's going on there? And in terms of, you know, baking prowess, how good would I need to be to make these?
If you can make regular cookies, you can easily make these. They're a really nice variation on a chocolate chip cookie. So they've got little white chocolate chips in there. And then the cookie dough itself is just rippled with all these lovely spices. And they're kind of bright yellow. And inside, they're kind of almost like a reddish, brickish colour now.
But also, I'm thinking, people will be listening to this now thinking, I know what they look like. You don't. Because you'll be thinking they're like a flat biscuit,
yes.
But they're more like a I don't know, what would you call
they're
that?
They're kind of like a fat, I feel like they're kind of like a New York style cookie, which is where they're deep, they're like thick, thick cookie. So a bit doughy in the middle and then a nice and, plump. They're not kind of those thin, crispy ones. Not a definitely not a biscuit.
All right, pin your ears back, everybody. Martha's here and she has made turmeric latte cookies. What the hell are those? We're about to find out. How do you make them?
So we're going to start with the spice blend. So we're taking cardamom pods first. You want to toast them in a little frying pan.
Okay.
And then we're going to take the seeds out and either pestle and mortar them or grind them up in a spice grinder. It's quite hard to buy ground coriander. It's not one of those spices that's readily available. So you do need to grind your own.
Wait, sorry now. Is that coriander or cardamom?
Cardamom. Did I say coriander?
You just did, yeah.
I do not mean that.
No, yeah. Because I was thinking, you can get ground coriander.
You're like, what?
So cardamom.
Cardamom. Can you imagine? These would be a very different colour if you used fresh coriander in them.
Yeah. Phew. Crisis averted, everyone. Crisis averted.
Cardamom pods.
Yeah.
Take away the papery bit, crush up the seeds. Then we're mixing it with dried ginger, the dried turmeric, a little bit of cinnamon and some black pepper. So you have this really kind of quite spicy blend.
Yeah.
So you've got all of those things going on. We're mixing them with some plain flour, some sugar, and then that goes to one side, and a little bit of baking powder, which is what makes them spread out. Then we are turning our attention to the wetter ingredients. Mm-hmm. So we've got a little bit of butter, some coconut oil as well going on there. I think people like to put coconut oil in some kind of lattes, and I don't know if turmeric lattes sometimes have coconut oil. Yeah. I also found out that turmeric lattes don't have coffee in them. I don't know why I'd always assumed there was a bit of coffee in there.
Well, because it's called a latte. It suggests there's some coffee in there.
I'm guessing it's just turmeric milk. Anyway, so no coffee in these. So if you're not a coffee person, you can still make them. So we're mixing together our sugar, the coconut oil, butter, whisk it till it's nice and soft. An egg goes in, then in with the dry ingredients, all the spices, everything like that. So you get this lovely thick dough and it will be a luminous yellow colour, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
Then we are just adding in some chopped white chocolate chunks, which is going to give those little nice melty pockets. Then roll it into balls. You can use a little ice cream scoop to do this. It goes onto a baking tray, into the oven, 12 to 14 minutes until they've spread out a little bit and they're nice and doughy in the middle. Then you want to let them cool on the tray for about 10 minutes before you dive in. And I reckon quite good with an actual latte. Might be a bit much to have a turmeric latte and a turmeric latte cookie going hand in hand, but one or the other.
And also what I like about them, I think quite an adult treat.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You look at them and think, oh, they're going to be super sweet. And they are sweet because of the white chocolate and obviously all of the sugar. But those spices kind of level it out, balance it. And it's not a gingerbread spice. It's quite an unusual spice blend. So I'm really enjoying those.
Kiddies beware. Kiddies beware. If you'd like that full recipe, you know what to do. You go to waitrose.com/showchef and you can find it along with all of Martha's recipes. If you want to see the plump, yellow gorgeousness of these cookies, then check out our socials at Virgin Radio UK. Thank you so much, Martha. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Graham. See you next
Cheers.
Week.
Cheers. Bye.
The Graham Norton Radio Show with Waitrose. Food to feel good about.
Virgin Radio.
I am joined now by Lorraine Kelly. Hooray. I wish it was Zoo Radio. Round of applause. Marvellous. Yeah, go on.
I'll applaud myself.
Yeah, do
I'm
it,
applauding
Lorraine.
You. I'm applauding you.
Yeah, do. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Debut novel. You must be pleased. pleased as punch.
Do you know what, there's nothing like it. Well, you know, because
well,
you're
it
a
is.
Writer.
Yeah, but...
And there's just something about when you get the book in your hand, because I know you can, I know, you know, I did the audible book as well, you know, the audio book, and you can do it on Kindle and whatever, but there's something, for me, it's got to be a book in your hand.
Yeah.
That you can just, you know, read pro anywhere you like, but usually I like in front of a Roden fire with tea and biscuits. I'm a dog.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Joy, just
all
joy.
That. Uh-huh. That's uh-huh. Bliss.
Escape.
But also, they've done you proud. Beautiful cover.
It's gorgeous, yeah. Isn't it? It's very much what I wanted, you know. It's just, yeah, it's exactly, it's got it.
Yeah, because what's nice about this cover is it is the book, in that there's darkness in the book, yeah. But actually it's kind of, the book is also very sweet. Tell us about Evie. Yeah. Tell us about Evie and Orkney.
Evie, lovely Evie. She is in Orkney. That's obviously, it's a place that I love so much, and my book was always going to be set there, and Orkney's almost like a character, I suppose. But Evie has to leave Orkney when she's in her late teens. You find out why. It's traumatic. She comes down to that London and she loses herself. She doesn't think that she deserves happiness or contentment or anything like that, doesn't deserve a good relationship, falls into a really, really horrible relationship with somebody who I just despise and is horrible. No redeeming features. But then she has to come back home because her dad's sick, and she has to come back home and try and rebuild bridges and try and, you know, all of the people that she basically deserted. And we find out why, you know, you understand. And she's got a terrible relationship with her sister. It's very, very toxic. And it's coming back. And I'm always interested in that. Having left Scotland and come to England, and I've always gone back home. But I do remember when I first came south, I didn't know anybody and I was really quite lonely. Not for long, because you make friends. But that sense of being isolated and not, you know, and I used to, like back then, I used to talk to people at the bus stop or the underground and they would be frightened of me.
And also, I think back then, where we came from seemed much further away.
Yes.
Because you couldn't get there quickly. You couldn't.
That's
and to ring people was expensive. Like the phone bills were something people worried about.
You're absolutely right. Because we didn't have the internet. It was in its infancy. Yeah. Yeah. And we didn't really have mobile phones. They were like big bricks. Do you remember?
Yeah.
They used to be in the car. Ah, those were the days. Remember those days.
And tell me this story. Was this story kind of cooking away in your head?
Or did they
just say, do you want to write a novel? And you went, oh, I'll think of something.
No, I'd always had lots of different stories buzzing about, but, you know, I always thought, for goodness sake, I can't possibly write. It's a full-time job. But I always had this thing, especially because I really love swimming, especially in the cold, and that was always going to be part of it. And that's very much part of the story. It runs all the way through. Evie's fear of water, and will she actually overcome it? And that sense of your friends, even if you don't treat them very well, your real friends would hold you up.
Yeah.
You know, like that. So I did have that story buzzing around. And then bringing in characters who are in a swimming club, it's like characters from, you know, all walks of life, all ages as well. So it gives you a chance to sort of get a group of women together, and some men too, obviously, but a group together that maybe you wouldn't get in normal circumstances. They might not know each other.
Yeah.
But they're part of this club, so they
and
love
also,
it.
And also, I imagine like small communities like Orkney, you know, people end up there for all sorts of reasons.
They do, you're right. And it's a place where a lot of people settle. And one of my characters, Andre, who was going to be a wee tiny character, and I don't know if this happened to you sometimes, he was only going to be little, and then he just grew and grew and grew, and I really like him.
Yeah.
So I wanted, and he was also a way of me maybe weaving in some of Orkney's rich culture and history, because he loves it so much, and he falls in love as well. And isn't it funny how you can really get so attached to something you've made up in your head that I don't want to say cheerio to him. I didn't want to say bye-bye to any of them, really. Even Liv, the dreadful sister, I still think, you know, you understand why she's like that when you read the book, you do.
And I thought a big, bold choice to have a trans woman kind of so central in the book. What was your thinking there?
My thinking there was just that we're all the same, Graham. We really are. And also, you only find out about Freya. You get to know her first as Freya, because that's who she is. You get to know her as a woman, a wise, wise woman in her late 70s, who's very much at the heart of the community. And it's only later on when you go back into the past.
Was that a spoiler?
No, not at all. Not at all. No. Yeah. It's really good. And it's great to get a chance to talk about it, that you find out, oh, she used to be a wee fella called Magnus, but that wasn't what she was supposed to be, and now she's who she's supposed to be. And I know there's a lot of negativity and a lot of, oh gosh, we know a lot of toxicity over a very, very, very small minority of people who have a really, really tough time.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say, look, we're all just the same. We're all trying to get on with our lives, and she's just Freya. She says that in the book.
I'm just freer. Yeah. You know, please don't put a label on me. Yes, I you know, I am a trans woman, but that's part of me, but it's not all of me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And also, I like the way you deal with it because, as you say, she's just a woman living in the community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's not an issue.
Not at all.
She's not.
Not at all. And I just, it was really, I felt very strongly about just, look, we're all just trying to get on with our lives. Because any trans people I know, they're just wanting to get on with it. You know, they want to go on with their jobs and, you know, they've got kids and they just want to live their lives.
Yeah.
Like we all try to do.
And tell me this, have you got readers in Orkney? Are there people on Orkney who you kind of like, you were giving it to, say, is this okay?
I gave it to Helen, lovely Helen Doole, who I know really well, and we actually launched the book in Orkney last week. I went up there to launch it. Oh, it was lovely. It was all covered in snow. It was absolutely beautiful. It did mean we had a slight sort of problem getting off Orkney. We had to go to Aberdeen via Shetland, which was an adventure. But wow. Fine.
Yeah. I have a book event to get to.
I got there with 5 minutes to spare. I got to St Andrews with 5 minutes to spare, but I got there on time.
So are you doing book events?
I have been doing book events. It's fantastic. Because you get, well, it's really good because I'm not giving a talk or anything. We just have a blether, you know, with a fellow author. Reverend Coles is doing something with me on Monday and I love him.
Yeah, so that's just
a chat. And then people ask you questions and then you sign your book. They sign a book for them. It's delightful. And it's really nice to get to chat to people as well. I've had a ball over the country, you know, starting in Orkney and working my way all the way down.
And also it'll be nice as it goes on, you'll start talking to people who've read it.
Yes, that's the thing, because I keep saying to people, oh, let me know what you think. Oh, I hope you enjoy it. Oh, let me know what you think. So it'll be really lovely to actually start. Well, will it? I hope it will.
It will. Presumably you've got the bug now.
I have, Graham, and I've got unfinished business with these characters.
Oh.
Because it's not all wrapped up in a wee bow. The big issues, like the big twist, is a twist sort of halfway through and then again towards the end that I hope nobody gets. But there are, I don't want to say cheerio to them.
No, it was interesting you said that earlier that you don't want to say goodbye to them.
Know.
Because I always feel at the end of a book, I do want to say goodbye to them.
Do you?
I've never wanted to revisit characters. I always feel like I'm done and dusted.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Right.
So it's interesting you don't feel like that.
I don't, because I do like some of them. I love some of them. Some of them drive me crazy because, you know, I just think, for goodness sake, why did you do that? And then I think, well, why did you make her do that? So I have to take responsibility, to be fair. But it is incredible how you've got an idea, you know, a beginning, middle and end, and it's not a straight Roman road. You go all over the place. You know, you go through a roundabout, you go down a tunnel sometimes. And rookie mistake, I overwrote a lot and then I had to edit it.
Oh, really?
But I didn't mind the editing process because I'm used to that in the job because, you know, you get the same as you. You get loads and loads of information about someone and then you've got to distill it into a few bullet points in your head as to where you're going to go with the conversation.
Yeah.
So I actually rather enjoyed that whole process,
so
trying to cut it down.
Like, so some of that stuff, the material that you cut out, you feel... I'm going to pop that in.
No.
Oh,
can't.
I see. Oh,
no,
you're done.
No, it's gone.
Okay.
No, it's gone. It wasn't good enough. And it's gone. And the characters didn't add anything.
Yeah. But I'm interested.
Those ones
I'm interested
that I had to.
Because I guess, because if you're going to write another book set in Orkney, it would make sense that these characters would crop up again. You're going to bump into them.
I think they've been deleted. Sadly and tragically, they are no longer around. I've got plenty of rich characters and I've got a wee idea for something that may or may not work. I'm working on it just now. And if it does, then it's going to be even more shocking than this one. Because although it gets very deep emotionally, it is funny. There are funny bits.
Yeah, no,
in it.
Absolutely.
There's silly funny bits because life's funny and we're all silly, you know. And there's not, frankly, I don't think there's enough silliness in the world, really. We need more silliness.
And Lorraine, is there a thing where, because somehow writing a novel, you would think a memoir would be the most revealing thing to write, but actually a novel is kind of oddly more revealing.
You are so right, because there are little bits of me in there that live, the horror, you know, the horrible sister that doesn't like her. That's me. There's bit,
no,
no,
Lorraine,
it is.
No.
Graham, I was horrible to my brother. I was 6 years older than him and he was so beautiful. I mean, he was the baby from... He looked like a cherub, you know, with the blonde hair and the big blue eyes. He was gorgeous. And I loathed him. I hated him and used to nip him and steal his orange juice. And I said to my mum when he was a week old, I don't like him, can you send him back? I don't want him. So there's a little bit of that in there and lots of wee bits. There's nobody, it's not based on anyone in particular, but it's just lots and lots of bits of people that I've interviewed and listened to. Maybe it's just all by osmosis.
You know what I mean? It's all
coming out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we look forward to book number two.
Thank you.
Right now, The Island Swimmer, Lorraine Kelly's debut novel, is in hardback and it's a really great kind of, it's a sort of story you can just get lost in.
That's what I want. Thank you, Liam.
Yeah. Well, I said to you, I think it wasn't on the show, but I just said it's a yarn. I love the word yarn.
Don't you? I do.
Because it's all the threads and it's somehow, this, I don't know. It's, just,
yeah, it's like a jumper, a complicated jumper.
And it is you've created a proper yarn. So thank you so much. Thank you. And go have lunch.
I will.
Yes. Enjoy the city that awaits. Lorraine Kelly, lovely to see you. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for listening today. You can catch me every Saturday and Sunday from 9:30 on Virgin Radio. Follow us on all our socials to keep up to date, and make sure you check out our YouTube channel too. Just look up at Virgin Radio UK and you'll find loads of great interviews and live sessions. Until next time.
The Graham Norton Radio Show with Waitrose. Food to feel good about.
Virgin Radio.